Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. It is the 25th of March. It's a Wednesday and 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. We hope that you are well. We hope that you are in place. We hope that you are doing the best that you can under these circumstances that can often be trying. And hopefully we will add something to your day, whether it be informational or maybe therapeutic. Maybe you can just, I don't know, get it all out at this point. But hopefully you will stay with us. We have a lot going on and a lot to talk about and wonderful people to talk about it with. So let me introduce them to you and we'll get started. Also, a reminder that if you want in on the fun and would like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is send us a letter. Email us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. For God's sakes, don't send us a real letter because I'm not going near my mailbox until this stuff's all over with. Panel@wamc.org. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, my leader. How are you?
Right back to you, sir. It's great. We're good. Everything's fine. We're trying to get, we have one panelist that we're still waiting on. And so we're trying to get that connection. That would be Chris Churchill, who is the Times Union columnist, and we'll get him connected and on the line in just a few moments. In the meantime,
he's a born communicator, so I don't think there's any question, you know, that we'll.
Yeah, we got to figure it out.
That we'll get him. That's absolutely true.
So there's that. And then also the people that we definitely have on the line, which we're thrilled about, investigative reporter and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Very nice to talk to you. Also, we have Jim Ketterer back with us. He is the currently the Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University at Cairo. He is here in Albany, although not here in the studio, sequestered in his home. And we thank you very much for being with us again.
It's very nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
We very much welcome your insights, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. The latest I have here, Rob, is that Chris thought he was connected, but he guessed he's not. So we're trying? Okay. Excellent. So we're going to get Chris Churchill on the line, and then, but in the meantime, we will start and get things going. I don't think, Rosemary, we shouldn't wait for him, right?
No, he'll catch up. He's probably listening, and then he could just have a big rant.
Okay. There's that. All right. So let's go with what's happening in the world. We will talk about a whole bunch of stories, and then we'll get to our thoughts on them. So first off, the Senate and the Trump administration agreed early this morning on a roughly $2 trillion plan that would this is a stimulus package that was agreed to somewhere after midnight last night between the Senate, and it's looking to help all people. That's what it's looking to do. It would send direct payments and jobless benefits to individuals, as well as money to states and businesses hit by the coronavirus pandemic. The legislation is still being finalized and is expected to be enacted within days. It is the largest fiscal stimulus package in modern U.S. history. That is one. Two, President Trump, during a town hall on the Fox News Network yesterday, announced that he wanted to reopen the United States for business by Easter. That is April 12th. That is 2.5 weeks away. Saying he believed that a crippled economy and forced social isolation would do more harm than the spread of the virus, public health experts said that lifting the restrictions now in place would result in unnecessary deaths. Economists assess the trade-off between economic well-being and health are pretty much the economists talk about how bad, obviously, this is going to be for the economy. But meanwhile, you have the health officials who are saying, you don't have much of an economy if none of us live to see it. Global markets rose on the news from Washington after a rally on Wall Street yesterday. It was a record yesterday. Meanwhile, in China and the province where the pandemic began, they lifted travel restrictions for most of its 60 million residents. India's 1.3 billion people are now on lockdown, must stay in their homes for 3 weeks. We mentioned this late yesterday, but for Olympic athletes now, the Summer Games in Tokyo have officially been postponed until 2021. National parks in this country, Yellowstone, Grand Teton, and Great Smoky Mountains are closed after concerns about crowding. People were going there, which certainly makes sense, but with too many people, they were concerned. And those are the big stories, except for the perhaps the biggest, which is the fact that during the press conference of the White House task force yesterday, it was announced that people who have passed through or left New York City should place themselves in a 14-day quarantine. About 60% of the country's new confirmed cases of the coronavirus were in the New York City metropolitan area. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has emerged as the Democratic Party's most prominent voice during the crisis, offered a grim forecast for the outbreak in the city and criticized the federal government for its slow response in sending crucial equipment, such as ventilators, saying, "You are going to send us 4,000. We need 33,000. What are you going to do with 400 ventilators when we need 30,000? And I believe the president announced last night at his address that the number was 4,000. But there you go. So a lot of information to take in. Those are the headlines. And we'll begin with Alan. You can take any part of those.
Well, there's so much to take here, Joe. I have to say, Andrew Cuomo's performance, as outlined by the New York Times today, has been so superb that one thinks that in a crisis, he, and we're getting a lot of mail on this, should be the presidential candidate. Well, he can't. Now, if Joe Biden, for some reason, I watched Biden on television yesterday. Frankly, I like the guy a lot. I thought he was competent in his remarks, but he was not really where he should be in terms of being able to voice the kinds of things that Cuomo has been doing. So I'm thinking that, you know, what this country needs to do is set itself up for leadership. I said yesterday, and Rosemary and I had a little bit of a disagreement on this, that maybe he didn't have to keep his word on having a woman, although it would be great to have a woman, because Cuomo has demonstrated by deed and voice that he is a possibility, you know, for that job. I doubt very much anything I say about that is going to have any effect at all. If Biden got sick or if Biden was not able to do it, it might be interesting in a closed convention whether or not he turned around and said, you know, I want to release my delegates to go to Andrew Cuomo. That's a possibility. I doubt that's going to happen also, but these are all things to consider. We here in Great Barrington are having a little bit of a tussle because a lot of people are giving up their New York domiciles to come up and live in their second homes. I got a letter from a guy this morning and said, how dare you encourage people to do that and to infect us all? That's the kind of thing you worry about, along with everybody lining up to get some guns. And the last thing I want to say is that in this package, which is not being talked about a lot, the largest amount by far, $500 billion, I believe it is, Joe, you can fact check me on this, goes to big businesses, the corporations, the airlines. Nothing new here.
No, and we can get the exact amount, but you're not, I don't think you're far off. Rosemary. Oh, well, actually, we just want to say hi to Chris. Chris is on the line. Chris, are you there?
Hey, Chris.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you
Excellent.
Hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. You're yeah. fantastic. We welcome you.
All right.
That's great. We're going to hear from Rosemary, and then I'll come to you. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Okay, well, I think Alan and I have a big disagreement on Cuomo. I do agree that he's doing a fabulous job, but this is his third term now as governor, and he should be doing it. This is a big crisis, and he is stepping up and doing what a leader should do, what we should be seeing from Trump and are not, and that's a contrast. While I think that's great, I'd love to see him be president someday. I would not throw out Joe Biden, and I definitely don't want to see him throw out the idea of a woman vice president. Biden, did a very good job yesterday. He's simply not in the position, as you said it, Alan, of being able to do what Cuomo's doing. He is not a governor on the front line, which Cuomo is. So I think that's the difference that you saw. I'd like to see us spending a whole lot more time on a national level, not state by state, figuring out how we're going to vote in November. Unlike the president, I don't think we're going to be up and back in business by Easter, and there's still going to be dislocation by November, and we need to figure that out. It's terrifying to me that there are still 12 states in this country that have open schools. So if we can't even agree on that, how are we going to agree on voting? And I also am concerned about that one quarter of a $2 trillion package going to corporations. I actually was not in favor of the bailout for car companies, but to give money to cruise companies and airlines, which have been making huge profits over the past 10 years, just seems completely unfair and ruinous to people. I also worry about how are we paying for that? No one in an emergency, it's really easy to say, we'll worry about the price later. But that's what we did with a huge tax cut 2 years ago that's already put our grandchildren in the hole. This is putting us, this $1 trillion relief package on top of that, into a hole that I'm not sure my great-grandchildren will be able to climb out of.
Right of response, Joe?
Yes, certainly, sir.
Answer that? Certainly, I agree with three-quarters of what Rosemary just said, and that's great.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's 75%. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. but the one quarter that I don't agree with her about is to suggest that Andrew Cuomo is just another governor. He is not. He stood up. He has done what the other governors haven't done. He's the leading voice. And I think Joe Biden could, let's put it this way, damned well step forward and be a little bit less lethargic on all of this stuff. You know, he's going to be the candidate against Trump. And he needs to really rev up his game, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, I will say he was on CNN yesterday. I saw him also on The View. I thought he did a great job. And this just gets back to what we were talking about earlier, earlier in the week, of, you know, does he get the airtime, and probably not, given what else is going on in the world.
Well, but he wasn't looking for any airtime.
One last point.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, one last point before we move on to Chris and all is that there's no doubt that Cuomo's done a great job. I have praised him here and in other places before that, but so has Elizabeth Warren, who was huge in the crafting of this final look of the relief package. So has Amy Klobuchar, who has been working around the clock despite her coronavirus affecting her family very personally. It's not as if there aren't other Democrats who are doing a great job. Biden is doing the best he can in the role he has, which is as presidential candidate, not as president in a frontline state. Governor Newsom, Governor Inslee, there have been lots of governors who are stepping up and doing great jobs. That's not to put down what Cuomo's doing. It's just I can't see upending the entire political process.
Then how come, Rosemary, they're not on CNN every day? I mean, you know, the fact of the matter
is at the epicenter. Yeah, we're at the epicenter. Yeah,
well, he was overwhelmingly.
He
was there before it was the epicenter. He has been cut out to do this work, and it's extraordinary. The others are terrific. I agree with you, but at the same time, they are not mobilizing the American people the way that Cuomo is.
All right, let's go to. I'm actually going to go to Jim Ketterer first because he was on time. And Chris, I know it wasn't your fault, but yeah. Let's go to.
Sorry, Chris.
No, go to Jim. Good morning, sir. How are you? What do you make of this?
I'm doing well, thanks. I don't know. I think Alan likes to have me on the show to be the contrarian sometimes, so I'll play a little bit of that role in just. In saying, I don't know. I have to say I'm not. I don't find it that compelling to be interested in right now, in the midst of this terrible crisis, and we know that the worst is still to come. The kind of who's up, who's down, who's in, who's out, who's on the Sunday morning shows, what have you. We will have time for that, and there will be an accounting of who's done well and who hasn't. But boy, we are really facing some awful circumstances. And the blocking and tackling, the logistics required, to deal with that, what Governor Cuomo is asking for, you know, down to numbers, here's what we need, here's who we need it from, here's when we need it, and if we don't have it, people will be dying. More people will be dying than need to. I just find that has my full attention, and I think it has the attention of most people. And I've worked in politics on the federal level and the state level, and I'm as interested in it as everybody else, but I'm not interested in it so much right now. I'm just much more worried about the logistics and the specifics of policy.
When it comes to the governor, Chris, I know you wrote a great piece about the governor this week. As Jim says, he has very specific numbers. He's saying what he needs. He's saying what he wants. There has been this just in the last 24 hours, this back and forth between the governor and the president. When we put that all into a larger context of the president's idea that we could perhaps be, what was the quote, to be back and raring to go by Easter Sunday, what do you make of that when you hear that coming out of the president? And then obviously, to Jim's point, the governor is looking at the hard numbers.
Well, I think that's, what the president said yesterday about being raring to go by Easter is clearly ridiculous. I mean, especially in the case of a city like New York or some of the other places that have been most affected. I mean, there's just no way. According to the governor, that's when this will be peaking in what, 14 days, I think he said. Right. So, I mean, there's just no way that New York is going to be back to normal. There's no way that New York is going to be raring. I think the phrase he used was raring to go. I mean, that's just not going to happen. But Cuomo.
Go ahead.
Well, go ahead.
Well, he was clear.
Well, Cuomo has been.
I mean, the president did say that there were going to be areas, and there would probably be geographic areas that would be able to go back to work, and others that wouldn't.
Right, but as the governor said yesterday, I mean, we're the canary in the coal mine. New York City is the canary in the coal mine. What we're experiencing now is going to be experienced by the rest of the country in a few weeks, right? I mean, that's why, it's interesting. Those of us who've kind of made those Cuomo briefings part of our daily routine, you can kind of notice certain mood shifts from day to day. And yesterday he was really, there was a real desperation to his tone yesterday that I hadn't heard before. I mean, he was almost begging for ventilators, yeah. Almost begging for help. And
it wasn't anger. It was just, it almost seemed like despair. It was a very clear, real feeling that, as you say, a desperation. Yeah.
Don't you think there may be an issue here that this governor and this president had sort of an operational deal? I don't know that it came down to using those words, but I'm not going to criticize you personally. And he hasn't, by the way, not even now. He can have the desperation and the rest of it. But I think he may think he's been screwed, that the deal has been sort of called off by this president. And that's why he did what he did yesterday.
Well, I'm gonna pause there.
Yeah, I have a whole different view, if I can say it.
Can you share your view after a break, Rosemary?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's all right. Let's just pause you there, and then we'll come back to your thought on it. I am interested in this because the president did take a couple shots at the governor yesterday. Okay, so we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer are all on the line. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll continue right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 25th of March, 34 minutes past the hour now. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And Rosemary Mayo, you had the floor before I took the carpet out from under you.
You did. You pulled a rug out from under me. We were talking about whether the governor sounded desperate in his appeal yesterday, and I did detect it, no desperation. I think he has figured out, as the president has not, that taking the high road is the way that you appeal to the American people. So he's not going to criticize Trump. He doesn't have to. And I think that the effort to say, like, my grandmother is not expendable, which I think will be a quote that survives this crisis, was a way to put, that's how he emotes. He was connecting with people. And he said, we need this. All of that whole address was aimed at empathy, I think naming his measure for his mother. And yeah. he brings up his mother frequently because she is a older woman and is vulnerable. I think that that's his humanity coming through. I don't take it at all as desperation. I think he's besting Trump, and our comments up to now seem to support that. He has the attention of the nation.
Can I mention one thing?
Yes, of course, Jim.
That I think that the governor has on his side, and I've said it before, and I continue to be worried that we don't have it so much on the federal level, and that is. That the governor has in place a lot of the right people in the right positions, not just high-level leadership positions, but, you know, emergency management, the State Department of Health, all of these, you know, these are places where they've got experts in charge. They've got people working on things that they've been through crises before. They know how to do this. It's unprecedented in a way. But a lot of the lessons learned from previous crises can be applied here. I don't think we have that same level of the right people in the right positions at the federal level, because that just has not been the way that the Trump administration has gone about thinking about government and appointing people to the places they need to be in. And now it's too late.
And the question then becomes, will Fauci be dismissed? Because you're right. You know, for the most part, in the end, the fish smells from the head. And in this case, it's Trump. But we see that Fauci has been giving him a run for his money as much as he can. And then we see him disappear. And then Trump has to deny that he's trying to fire him. So, panel, what do you think your expectations are? You think he'll go? You think he'll stay? I think he's 79 years old. Is that
he
right?
He is. Yeah. He is. I mean, I would just say the article, I read an article last night on this very subject, and it seems as though his place and his role within the White House and within the inner circle, that what goes on behind closed doors seems to be more constructive than what goes on in front of the microphone, and that he seems secure. I don't know whether that's true. Those are the reports. Rosemary, what do you think?
He's 79. I don't think it matters whether he comes or goes or what his exact position is. There is authority that comes from the actual title you have, and then there's authority that comes from expertise, and that's what he has. That doesn't go away no matter where you are in or out of government.
But it's nice to have him up there. I think you would agree. It's nice having him up there in the press conferences and saying when the president goes off and says, oh, we'll be back by Easter, everything's going. And then he comes in and says this, this, and this, which vaguely contradicts what the president has said. But it does give you.
As I've said before, he would have that pulpit, even if he were working for Newsom or Cuomo or Inslee. And he would still get the attention of the press because he has a natural expertise. I don't think he needs. I'd say that with the same with the doctor. Whose name I always pronounce
Burks,
wrong, who's
Deborah
head
Burks.
Of the medical test. I think she would have the same thing. She is a global leader in public health. She does not need the expertise of Donald Trump. And they would, their word contradicting him would be valuable, whether it's coming from the White House pulpit or from any other place in the United States or the world.
Chris Churchill.
You need to be in a position to actually make decisions that can be implemented. I think that's the key. You have to. You know, if Anthony Fauci were out of the office that he's in, people would still listen. But, you know, governing still requires putting policies in place and then implementing them.
Now, I don't know.
Do you think that either of those two people have that kind of power now where they are? Trump has made very clear that he takes advice from these people, but the decisions are his.
Ultimately, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors. But it's certainly worrisome.
Chris Churchill.
I don't know if anybody saw some of the clips, but Trump did a kind of a town hall type thing on Fox yesterday.
Oh yeah, I watched the whole thing. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, and he responded a little bit to the ventilator issue that the governor had raised earlier in the day, and he responded in a really just kind of disturbing way. He said that in 2015, I'm almost hesitant to repeat this because this is not good information, but this is what the president said. He said that in 2015, the governor had a chance to buy, I think, 15,000 or 16,000 ventilators and had chosen to go with lotteries and death panels instead. Did you see that clip in particular?
I did.
I mean, that was, and apparently that was taken, he handed over a sheet of paper to the host of the program. And apparently what he handed over, and apparently his source of information for that claim was a website that is not a reliable, to say the least, is not a reliable source of information. And it's disturbing to me that in the midst of a crisis, the president is still turning to, you know, essentially conspiracy theorists and really poor sources of information for his claims.
But don't you think
it was remarkable and completely irresponsible?
But don't you think? But don't you think for a second here that this guy's personality, and I am a big believer in character as a concept, is that if you're not me and you're making waves and you're doing well, I have to destroy you. I think that that's what this is all about. This is red meat to his base, and we know it. But that's what it's all about. It's that simple.
Rosemary?
I don't have anything to add to this, I think. I don't know.
See, well, I don't know why. Oddly, I don't believe you.
What's going on here?
What is
this is a historic moment. We need to mark this down.
She was doing something else. Come on.
No, I'm not doing something else. I'm wrapped with attention here.
Well, all right.
As Rosemary's thinking about it, maybe I would just mention, too, that following on what Chris said, that, you know, I think the president is drawing on a deeper reservoir of this longstanding, even before 2016, and growing mistrust in expertise and this idea that expertise, on the face of it, is suspect, that experts are somehow... Yeah. Coming at you with a highly skewed information and that you shouldn't pay attention to it, and that if you just Google enough and read up enough on the internet, you can know as much about public health or any other topic that the actual experts do. And this is a longer standing problem, certainly one that's been growing, and people have been writing about it. And, you know, now in the middle of a crisis, you really, you know, in a town hall meeting like that, you see it in its full display. It really is disturbing.
I mean, maybe that's why I have a confused response to this issue. I think that Fauci and the others, even Pence, who is a better organizer than Trump, are belittled by answering to him. And perhaps the way that they're most effective is to call out his deficiencies. He's taking orders from Fox News, for heaven's sakes. And maybe the better way to do it is to call him out rather than to stand behind him meekly without social distancing and behind his news conferences and act like you're part of a team. I don't know.
What we have here is a difference between, is this president really philosophical, as somebody has just suggested, about expertise, or is he just so self-serving, so, you know, oriented towards re-election, that none of that matters? What matters is who is getting attention, and is it him, and is it in any way turning off his base? I think it's all political.
Well, I think they tie in together, but I think he has a genuine belief that he is more expert than any expert on any topic that we have seen of importance to the country in his 3 years in office.
Could be.
They go together.
Yeah.
Let's. I want to take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters, so we'll get to those, and we'll break. The one thing I did want to mention, I was giving the headlines there. The one I left out, which many listeners have reminded me of, and I just want to make this right. Of course, one of the top stories coming out is the news that Prince Charles has the coronavirus. We learned that very early this morning, so that is another, yet another big story that is developing this morning as well. Let's go to a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, James Ketterer, and Alan Chartok all here. We'll be right back. 45 minutes past 9 o'clock, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We go to this letter from Ed, who says, both of my daughters are millennials who live in Brooklyn and recently lost their jobs due to the coronavirus and due shutdown. Both are renters. Is there any relief being discussed in Albany for renters? If not, how does Governor Cuomo expect the hundreds of thousands of renters in New York City, Albany, and other cities in New York State that are going to make it through the shutdown? My understanding, and I do not know this for a fact, but my understanding that there was some amnesty. Was it? Did anyone else?
No, Joe, I'm with you. That's exactly what I read. I don't know whether it came to fruition, but I do know that that there was supposed to be a hiatus in terms of rents, at least a proposal for such. I suspect that it is part of the Cuomo package.
Anybody know for sure? And if not, I'll move on, but we can do our homework. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Ed. We will see what we can find out for you. Maureen says, how will the feds get the money to individuals? In other words, how does it know names and account numbers? I don't know the answer to that one either, actually.
Oh, they know.
They know, don't they? They know everything.
Well, we all pay income tax, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Many of us do, and that's one piece of information that they have.
Well, and they're going to they send a check, right? And that's
yeah.
the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's,
and it's going to be based on how many kids you have and who's in the home, and I think at one point they were saying anything under, you had to be making less than $60,000. I didn't see that come up this time, but maybe it is still.
Well, the key line that I think I read very early on in the program was details are still being worked out on what they voted on.
Right,
so
right.
That'll be interesting to see what happens.
1,000 pages, Joe. 1,000 pages in
yeah.
the bill.
Sue says, good morning, panel. I appreciate all of your panel's input on this major health problem. Alan, what is the latest you've heard about cases and testing in Berkshire County? Also, panel, does the stimulus package help people like me who are self-employed and my work fluctuates? I cannot collect unemployment.
Well, David and, excuse me, Joe and his magic machine
yes.
will be able to say Berkshire County number of deaths, number of incidents. I do know that there have been what we could only call several. I want to warn everybody that in my lexicon, several means more than two. There have been several in Berkshire County. I don't know about Great Barrington where I live, but up in Pittsfield, there have been a few.
I know there has, I believe there have been three deaths in Massachusetts and, or four deaths in Massachusetts and two were in Berkshire County. I do know that. I will try to find out numbers that are a little bit more up to date as far as overall, but I do know that two of the deaths in the state of Massachusetts were in Berkshire County. So we'll find out more on that. You know, one of the problems that I think we're all having within journalism and the news is that these numbers are changing so rapidly that, I mean, they give you an idea, but by the time you say them or they're printed anywhere, they're usually outdated. So,
you know, Joe,
which is
CNN,
very unfortunate. Yes.
You know, CNN has been putting up the number, the worldwide deaths and then in the United States. And it's astounding if you just watch that number go up. It goes up and up and up real time. So you're quite right that these things do change.
And well, the numbers aren't even really that useful because, I mean, we don't know the confirmed cases is only the people who've been tested. Obviously, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of cases where people haven't been tested.
Well,
right.
Chris, I was talking about deaths. Not incidents of the disease. You're quite right.
All right. We go to other letters and to this one who says, oh, Alan, here we go. Alan, I'm greatly disappointed in your wish for Biden to choose Cuomo as his running mate. I agree that Andrew is doing a great job managing the state's response to the pandemic, but to dismiss all extremely well-qualified women as candidates is preposterous. For every Andrew Cuomo, there are 100 qualified women that could do just as good a job, if not better. Please don't dismiss an entire gender based on one man's performance. It's time for a woman to be on a winning ticket.
Okay, I agree with the letter. I agree with the letter right down the line. It is time. On the other hand, I'm not dismissing anybody. So take it back. The reason what I was saying is that Cuomo has shown a leadership verve, which is not being matched by anybody else right now. And if I'm Joe Biden, I would be thinking about it. But let's assume for a second that you're absolutely right. We do need a woman as vice president of the United States. And I have my real doubts as if Joe Biden is going to go back on his word to choose a woman.
There is a point to be made about executive.
I would hold it against him if he did. There are other important jobs if Cuomo really wants to move away from state politics at this time.
You don't hold a grudge, do you?
Yeah, Rosemary. So that's so interesting. So let me just ask you a diagnostic question here, Rosemary, just for a second. And that is, if he does do that, let's say he does choose Cuomo, which I don't think he will, and he goes back on his word, you're going to vote for Trump or stay home? I would hold
I'm
it against him, you
said. I'm going to be an unenthusiastic voter. Oh, but I won't work for Biden.
You'll hold it against him, that's all.
Did you say you won't vote for Biden then?
Yeah. I would be an unenthusiastic voter, and I would not work for him.
But no, you would vote for him.
You have to, because the only other choice is Trump.
Aha! My point exactly.
Chris, you wanted to say.
I was just going to make the point that, one thing that I do hope that Biden considers, and one thing that Cuomo is really kind of exhibiting right now is executive experience. A lot of the names that are we see on the lists that Biden is apparently considering, people like Amy Klobuchar, they haven't been governors. You know, I think there is real value in having somebody, especially given Biden's age, there's real value in having somebody in the ticket who has led a state, especially a state as big as New York. I'm not making a pitch for Cuomo to be on the ticket, but I do think that, you know, we have part of the problem with the Democratic field is that there were too many senators, I think, and too few people with actual leadership experience.
Well, the case has been made.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is why there have been no women. There is always a reason not to vote for a woman at this time. This is it. You're seeing it now.
No, I'm not saying. I mean, I'm sure that there are female governors he could choose. I'm sure that there are, you know, female mayors of large cities that he could choose. But it's just, given his age, he really has to consider whether the person is ready to be president. And being the executive in charge is great training for the presidency. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And of course, you never know with Harry Truman. Who knew about Harry Truman? You know, a haberdasher who hadn't gone to college gets into the presidency and does a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
We go to John, who says, thanks for everything you provide. You're all great voices of sanity in a crazy world. Since many of the cruise lines are not American companies registering their ships in foreign ports, I agree with the many voices out there that are saying they are not entitled to American bailouts. What do you think? The president did say yesterday.
That's a good point.
Yeah, the president
said
yesterday that it was going to save, by helping the cruise industry, it was going to save thousands of American jobs. But most of those people working on those cruise ships are not Americans. I'm not
right.
saying
they
should.
They hire cheap labor. They hire cheap labor from other countries, and they register under the flags of foreign countries so they evade U.S. taxes. So I don't want my taxpayer dollars going to help them out. I really think that's not unreasonable.
But here's the point. $500 billion goes to the corporations, by far the most of all of the money, much more than is going to the Americans who are out of work. And in the rhetoric surrounding this, we hear precious little about that part of the package. It's all about the people. It's all about paying people so that they can continue. It's all about small business. But it's not about that $500 billion that's going to the corporations.
We go to Ellen, who writes, Governor Cuomo proposed that the path to get the economy moving is by testing people for antibodies and sending those who are found to have had the disease back to work. Why isn't this being repeated and repeated and repeated all over the place?
Yeah, so I think this is a very important point that he has been making in his press conferences and his media appearances, and where the governor is positioning himself between these two extreme choices of having the economy shut down and just focus on public health, or opening the economy and sacrifice public health. And he's was very clear, and he said, look, there are other ways in which we could start step by step to find out who really is most vulnerable, who's had the disease already, maybe doesn't even know they have the disease, and are likely now have some level of immunity, and can not only return to work, but also can return to, you know, volunteering so they can assist with this crisis, et cetera. I agree with the letter writer. I think this is crucially important. This is sort of the central thing, and it does really go back to our question about expertise. You know, this is what the experts are saying to the governor, and he's able to articulate it in a policy way. And I think I find it very compelling.
Great point. We're going to go to Andre's letter now about China. More and more, we are learning about the deliberate withholding of information about the virus from the Chinese authorities. Earlier sharing by China could have saved lives and been less costly to the economies around the world. Their blatant disregard for the welfare of the world should be understood for what it is, crimes against humanity. How do we deal with them going forward is anyone's guess. Somehow China needs to be held in account, to account. We go to Anne, who says, Trump says this is a war. The virus is the enemy. The federal government supplies protective equipment for our soldiers. In this current war, our healthcare workers are our frontline soldiers. The federal government should absolutely be supplying PPEs, personal protective equipment, for those of you who, like me, often say, what does that mean? For our medical staff. This is a great point. I think it's something that is being brought up more and more, but maybe not being brought up enough, of just how many and what the records are, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, of how many of the cases at any given place are the health workers who are on the front lines and are as we talked about earlier in the program, of not having the supplies they need, and there are pleas going out to help, and yet it doesn't seem to be enough.
Well, that's one thing. The governor yesterday really was pleading for the full use of the National Defense Authorization Act, and said that it was inexplicable that Trump hasn't used that power, and that speaks exactly to the shortages. We need this stuff made as quickly as possible, and there doesn't seem to be anybody stepping up to do it and deliver what we have to have.
Has anybody figured out exactly why Trump invokes the power but won't use it? What's the reason for the reluctance? Has that been figured out?
It's really confusing. It's amusing to me in a way, because we've spent 3 years calling him an authoritarian, and now he's got this power at his disposal.
Right.
At his disposal, he won't use it.
And it was very weird.
It's really hard to argue whether it's the right decision or not, because I can't figure out why he's doing it.
It was weird last night, because he said, I know... Hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. But there was a contradictory statement when he said that we're going to invoke this. By the way, we've already invoked it, and it's working very successfully. So I don't really know what
right.
aspect of it is being invoked, was invoked, is being used, wasn't being used. And
yeah, I mean,
it's very soupy. Yes.
Chris. From what I understand, he's invoked it technically, but he's still asking. It's all on a voluntary basis. He's not demanding that any
right.
company... And
correct.
As Cuomo said yesterday, that won't work. Companies need an influx. They need an influx of federal money. They need an influx of they need the promise that the federal government will buy the product before they can make those changes. It's very difficult to do on a voluntary basis. You need a certain amount of capital to make the change. And without the full use of the NDA, those companies just don't have that capital.
We're going to pause there. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We will have another 45 minutes or so. And we welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Kindergarten fun with the Board Ops. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and James Ketterer. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have many, many letters. I want to get to as many, many as we can in the time that we have here, and then move on to some other stuff as well. We got this from Tim, who says, thank you for your good work, upbeat attitude, and helpful discussions. I heard mail-in voting is being proposed for New York. We will have to wait and see. My question, have you heard if absentee voting is okay to use for at-risk citizens such as those age 70 or with compromised immune systems, or if one simply does not know if they will become at risk at the time? Requests for an absentee ballot can be made for those with temporary illness or disability, among other reasons. So this is a question about New York voting. I don't know the answer offhand, although I would assume a quick call to the Board of Elections would help you. Anybody else on that?
No.
Okay.
No, but I did talk to Liz Krueger this morning for the Capital Connection show. She's the senator, very powerful senator who is in charge, and a good person, who is in charge of the financial committee in the finance committee in the state Senate, who did say that people were thinking about this and hard at work at ways to do this. You know, Joe and group, here in Great Barrington, in Massachusetts, they've just called off postponed the town meeting and the town elections, right? And everybody, who could fault them for doing that? You know, who wants to go out? And yet, when there have been elections, people have come out. Now, I'm very concerned about this, and I'll tell you why. Because it sets the stage for what we know is going to happen when the president of the United States says we got to postpone the election, we got to postpone the primaries, we got to make sure that people are safe so we can't have it. And that worries me. It scares me to death.
Anyone on that? All right.
I certainly would be worried by that, but though it would be hard for him to make that argument and at the same time say we need to have America back to work by April 12th.
Hey, Jim, has that kind of duplicity from this man ever stopped him? No.
Silly me.
All right. We go back to the letters, or back to the letters we go, I should say. Louise is in New Orleans, Louisiana. There have been a few and intermittent reports that New Orleans is having the fastest rise in the coronavirus cases in the world. Why is New Orleans not mentioned as a new hotspot? It's just Washington, California, and New York that have been mentioned. Is it because the only states mentioned have Democratic governors? Also, Florida will probably blame New York for all of its cases, disregarding Florida's failure to close down its beaches and then releasing all the spring break participants to disperse all across the country.
Well, as you all know by now, I have a wonderful son, Jonas, who is in New Orleans and who lives in New Orleans. And so I've been very attuned to anything that is mentioned about New Orleans in the media. So this assumption that nobody ever mentions New Orleans is just wrong. I saw a huge story about New Orleans just yesterday, and it has been paid attention to. It's not New York City, obviously, which has this thing, but New Orleans has been mentioned prominently in the press.
Rosemary?
Yeah, Alan is right. The New York Times has been running lots of stories on the hot spots, and Louisiana is nowhere near New York, but it is definitely a danger spot. It's really interesting that the disease has struck in Democratic strongholds. That's because it's an urban disease. It's easier to spread in the big crowds in a city, and it's one of the reasons that Trump had got away for so long with downplaying it, because red places, rural places that support him, were not seeing it. They are beginning to, and I have no doubt that they will, but up to now they have not. And he definitely praises DeSantis in Florida, all the Republican senators who have not taken the measures of the Democratic senators, who, again, that corresponds with urban and rural, too. It's really interesting.
Go back to the letters. Joe writes, the religion of capitalism cannot tolerate abstinence. Businesses cannot endure being shut down for long, and if government tries to bail out everybody, who's going to pay for that and how? A tough decision is going to have to be made. Protect the vulnerable, help them protect themselves, and life has to go on.
Well, Cuomo has been very clear about that. You protect the vulnerable first, and then you worry about the businesses. And you borrow and you borrow and you borrow. We're talking about a huge $1 trillion, couple of trillion dollar bailout here. And as in World War II and any other time, the answer is going to be, we'll figure out a way to pay it back later. And it has been paid back in the past. Of course, somebody's making money out of all of this.
Lisa takes us to task, saying maybe you should stop bashing Bernie. His panels and press conferences have been superb, and this in all capital letters, stop pretending he does not exist.
Okay, I want this one.
Okay, Rosemary.
Bernie is a... Bernie is completely out of line to not step aside and get on with this. The election is more complicated than ever, and there is no path for him. He has already lost, so get out. Be the patriot he claims to be, and get going to get Trump out of office.
Anybody else? Oh, Chris, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Did we lose Chris?
Oh, boy.
Oh. We wanted Chris.
I feel so bad about that.
All right. We'll try to get him back.
Our crack engineering staff will get him back.
All right. We'll try to see what happens. Just so people know, we're using an app and technology. And what will often happen is that if there is some inactivity, it'll drop you. And so on a panel like this, where you're on and you're off, it'll sometimes throw you out. So that's right, Joe.
And that's why I keep talking.
Yeah. So he has to reconnect, and we'll get him back on, I promise. Okay, so we'll hold that one. Please, when reporting...
Can I say that I am, unlike the president, genuinely happy that Mitt Romney does not have coronavirus. It was one more sign of his lack of class that he made a sarcastic tweet about the one Republican senator who voted for his impeachment not having the virus. It was awful this morning. And so I don't want to sound like Trump on Bernie Sanders, but I think he's doing his job well as a senator. He's worked on the relief package to get his ideas across, which is only what he should be. I'm not putting him down, but to make him some kind of a hero that he's staying in the race when he should not is just wrong.
Chris, are you back?
Uh-oh.
All right. We thought he was back. I guess he's not. All right.
I promise I'm not sabotaging his app. I promise.
We got this letter from Liz who says, currently the K-12 schools in New York State are set to open next week. Obviously, this cannot occur with the present risk. Why is Governor Cuomo taking so long to make a further announcement regarding K-12 schools? My understanding, does anybody know anything? I know that... There is an expectation that they will stay closed into April, if not for the rest of the year. But I know that declaration has not been made yet. Does anybody else know more?
Cuomo is holding daily briefings. He can do this on a day's notice, and he correctly is saying that right now his number one priority are ventilators, more ventilators. So he'll get to the schools. I don't see anything meaningful or sinister about his not announcing it before now.
And by the way, there's been a big debate as to whether the kids are safer in the schools than not being in the schools. I mean,
didn't know that.
Yeah, to me, the idea is that you are better off closing the schools right now. On the other hand, you got parents who have to work. You have other things that they're not capable of taking care of their kids. There's a whole feeding issue that keeps coming up. How are you going to feed many of these kids who have three meals a day at school? These are tough decisions.
I did hear members of the New York congressional delegation from New York City on CNN this morning saying that they were upset with the mayor for not closing the New York City schools earlier. And that was very much an issue for them, that they feel that a lot of this could have been alleviated, especially among because school teachers have been hit especially hard, and even some students, young students, have been affected as well. Brian writes to us and says, why would any semi-intelligent employee go back to work in a surging pandemic merely because our campaigner in chief says so? Well, if they tell you you're going to lose your job, I don't know what you do, but I guess I understand the point of the letter. I just I would say that
I think is exactly why Governor Cuomo is right in saying we really need to step up on testing, not just to tests about who currently has the disease, but who has had it and who could go back. And he really lays out a compelling plan. I don't think the capacity is in place yet to make that work, but I think if it were starting to, that could start to address the concerns of the letter writer.
Barbara writes to us and says, please, when reporting that the president wants to reopen business, point out, one, he did not close businesses, or two, and or, two, order any stay-in-place or home self-quarantine, that he, Trump, abdicated that role to governors, and only the governors are in control of their states. Also, Russ says recovery from the coronavirus will be long and expensive. With herd immunity more than a year away, arrangements will need to be made to identify and permit those who have recovered for their return to work. And in businesses where the infection reoccurs, measures will be needed to shut down and trace the chain of transmission. All of this will take planning, people, and money, like the additional hospital beds. We can only hope that the search for a vaccine is successful. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Christopher says a corporation is a person. Well, a regular person, if they go down from a tragedy, for example, an accident, one has to go down to $2,000 in savings before they get any social help. The same should be the rule for corporations. Exxon, then go to $2,000 in savings. Airlines, down to $2,000 before they get help. Anything else is a farce. Ella, Chris, are you back?
I am.
Did you hear?
I am, I think.
Did you hear the whole thing about the letter about Bernie Sanders and?
Oh yeah, I heard a little of Rosemary's rant.
Okay, did you want to respond? We went. That's how we realized.
It was reasoned argument, Chris. Reasoned argument.
Did you want to respond to that, sir?
Well, to respond to the notion that he should drop out, is that what the letter was about?
The letter was more about that we are ignoring Bernie, that Bernie is doing press conferences every day, and that he is saying really good things on this issue, and we are acting as if he does not exist, which then led Rosemary to say that if he was the patriot that he claims to be, he would drop out and clear the way for Joe Biden.
Okay, so I agree with the first. I agree with some of what the letter writer is saying. He has been saying really good things, and he does have really good plans and ideas for how to confront this crisis. But I think his problem is similar to what Biden is experiencing. It's just, it's very hard for these guys to get any oxygen in this news cycle and in this environment. It's, you know, and I don't think Bernie should. I don't think. Bernie should drop out if Bernie wants to drop out. I still think he has a lot to say. I think that there are a lot of people who still would like to vote for him. I don't know what his path forward is, but I don't think he's doing anything unpatriotic by staying in the race. Well, I mean, you know, this is a democracy. If people want to vote for him, they can vote for him.
Rosemary?
Well, blah, blah, blah. Of course, no one is saying he has to. There's no rule he has to get out. I'm just talking about
sense. I keep hearing people say.
I don't think he's showing it.
I don't know. I
could listen to this forever. This is great.
Yeah.
I think that who was it who said it earlier may be right, that this is really not a great time to be talking about who's ahead in the horse race and politics as usual. I understand that even while I'm completely and totally engrossed in all of that, I love all that stuff. But I think Bernie is suffering. He's not helping his own image the way he's carrying on this way. He does have good ideas. But again, I say, so does Elizabeth Warren. She was singled out for praise by Schumer today for all of her work on this. So is Amy Klobuchar. It's not like he's alone. This is a time when we're supposed to be acting in concert to overcome a terrible situation. I don't see Bernie doing that. He's still trying to call attention to himself.
See, I don't think that's the case. He's been raising a lot of money for coronavirus efforts. He's been doing a lot of good things. And I think he still has really good points to make on policy. I think a lot of the policies he's advocated all along, from, you know, some of the health insurance, Medicare for all positions to some of the issues we're seeing with supply lines speak directly to what he's been saying about trade for years and years. Yeah, I think his voice is still important, but this is obviously really difficult terrain for anyone who's trying to run for president. I mean, Biden is having a lot of the same a lot of the same issues. It's you know, the New York Times today was describing Cuomo as the face of the Democratic Party. I mean, that's awfully awkward yes. for Biden when Biden is supposed to be the nominee. You know, he's supposed to be the face of the party.
Let's go to
Chris. We don't disagree. I think yeah. Bernie has had great ideas, and his voice is important. His running for president is not. In fact, it's obstructionist.
Well, he's barely running at this point, though. What is he even doing? He's not campaigning. He's not holding rallies. He's just, you know, he's trying to make speeches the same way that Biden is. It's not like he's out there. It's a pretty low level campaign at this point. And I think what he's probably hoping okay. that at some point things can ramp back up again. But and maybe that's not realistic. But, you know, I don't think it's the greatest thing.
Yeah,
in the
maybe
world.
It's completely unrealistic. So your argument is that he's running an ineffective campaign. So therefore, it's OK to keep doing it. Nuts.
No, I'm saying he's got a message that he wants to. I'm just hoping my Wi-Fi cuts out again so that I can. Get out of this.
All right. Well,
maybe I'll pretend.
I'm gonna move on. So we're gonna get you out of this because I want to talk about other things. Right. Louise says, does the governor have the power to work directly with companies capable of producing the personal protection equipment and respirators? If not, can legislation be passed to give this ability? Well, I think that was where the frustration that he had came in, right? That you can do so much, and he was looking to the federal government for help in this.
I think what the governor was saying yesterday is that he is in touch with a lot of these companies, and he's doing what he can, what any governor can, but he's also finding himself in a situation where states are kind of bidding against each other for the same equipment, and you know, this really is an appropriate and important role for the federal government to play. And as Chris was saying before, it seems completely baffling that the president has invoked but hasn't completely implemented the Defense Production Act.
I preface this next letter with, I don't think we know the answer to this yet, but Rosemary noted, says Neil, that she was opposed to the auto bailout during the Great Recession, but the auto companies repaid those loans with interest, turning a nice profit for the country. My question is,
correct.
Does this bill require the airline and cruise companies to similarly repay whatever loans they receive?
Yeah, I don't know that. I know that Democrats were pushing for that, but I don't know if they got it in. So we need to look for that.
What they did get, Rosemary, was a inspector general who would make sure that the money was being used effectively.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think we know yet.
I know that they were touting accountability and speedy accounting for where the money was going, which was not in the original bill, and that's an improvement. But that's all I know.
I don't think that the full text of the bill has even been released yet, has it? It hadn't the last time I checked.
No, it hasn't.
Yeah. 1,000 pages.
Yeah, and they're still working out the details. So we now go to Ella, who says, do you think Trump doesn't want blue states to get ventilators? Well, I don't. Not really comfortable with that one. But Holly says it's, what is this? I don't know what that is. All right. Let's go to James, who says, Biden is doing just fine. A six-week campaign is all we need in the United States. I believe most Americans have decided on president. The choice is clear, and I was encouraged to hear that from Mr. Biden that is moving to social media online presence. So there is that. Andrew says, as more and more states experience their COVID-19 crisis and their respective governors step up and meet the challenge, Donald Trump's weaknesses as a leader becomes more and more evident.
Well, if that's the case, then I would ask all of you why we're not seeing any kind of movement in the polls. In fact, we're seeing quite the opposite. Trump's numbers have been actually improving. So the idea that Trump is showing himself more and more is okay with me, and it's okay with the blue states. I'm concerned that it is not that this nonsense that he pulls all the time isn't having an effect with the regular Republican voters.
A Gallup poll that came out yesterday afternoon showed that 60% of Americans approve of the way he's handling this crisis, and only 38% disapprove. And it also showed his highest, you know, general approval rating ever, I believe. It was at 49%.
As you know, I quite frequently refer to the Gallup poll as the best one that best Republican poll that money can buy. They've been wrong lots, but they are saying it, and you know, it is troubling to me.
We go to Luke's letter. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think this is patriotism. Americans rally around leaders in time of crisis.
And yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
He's getting the advantage of that.
Also,
yeah, that's a good point, Rosemary.
And also, you're seeing a lot of the rest of the country who's not directly, you know, if they're not seeing the cases where they are in much of the country, that would account for it too, right? I mean, they're seeing that the crisis
and you know,
is not.
I mean, a listener called me out for doing traveling with my elderly mother just before the crisis really exploded here. And it is hard when you're out there to see that this is a crisis. The contrast between what I see in empty streets and what emergency room doctors, what my sister, a nurse, sees every day is so wide. It is really easy to listen to the reassurance of Donald Trump and believe in it. It's Cuomo's having a harder time than Trump, making people try to gear them up for how bad this is. You don't see it unless you're in the hospital.
I think that's going to be changing, sadly.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. But
would you like to expand on that, Jim?
Well, I just mean that as we see the virus spread across the U.S. and to more places in the world, we're going to see not only more cases, but sadly we'll see more deaths. And as people are more directly affected, I think that you know, they'll just see the immediate effects of this, and it won't be at such a remove, and it won't be such a kind of an abstract issue. It will be increasingly real.
Let's go to this from Stephen, and says, at least it's nice that the earth is getting a break as a result of social distancing and shutting down. Ann says, did you hear Biden talking from his house? He looks and sounds like a tired old man, not up to it. Compare that to Bernie's talk last night with all the people he invited to help give information about the virus, vigor and information and support. Jennifer says, this is about Bernie hanging on. Isn't there a risk that some or all of the older candidates will be eliminated in the pandemic? So should multiple candidates stick around just in case? This is a dark letter. Isn't continuing Democratic debates the best way to deliver campaign messages now when the virus makes direct campaigning seem petty? I wouldn't have answered it either, panel. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Stephen says, I apologize. We read that one. Let me delete it. There we go. Claude says, I have read in a number of places that one can get the virus again if one has had it and recovered. Thus, there may be no immunity. What has our esteemed panel heard or read? I heard there was an immunity, but I don't know. How do you?
Yeah, I've heard conflicting things. I heard Chuck Schumer on television this morning say he wasn't sure that there was. So it doesn't. It doesn't seem to be a definitive answer on that.
Not only
I would
that,
just
but
say that I think I hope that the definitive answer comes from the experts and not the politicians.
Yeah, we right. have heard.
Well, it may
one
come from China, which has reopened, and they had the most number of cases before New York, and so we're going to see what happens if they get shut down again.
We also have been hearing from the scientists about mutation. And that this virus has already been discovered to have several different mutations, and there are real implications for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but those implications can be good and bad. I mean, sometimes they can mutate and kind of peter out. Other times, you know, they can mutate and become more dangerous. So, that's not clear either.
Well, I'm a political scientist, not that kind of scientist.
me neither. I know.
And I have no idea.
Neither. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Janice says, how do retirees and pensioners sit in the federal rescue package? I think we will find that out in the days to come. We're going to take just a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we'll continue. We have many, many more letters. I want to get to those and hear from all of our panelists again. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Romeo, and Jim Ketterer. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. I just want to mention a couple of things about the letters. We've been getting so many letters. So many people are home, and obviously this is a huge topic, and we've just been inundated with letters. So I want to just quickly address three things. Number one is that we have had more than a couple of people write to us admonishing us for not ever reading their letters, and also giving data and proof that when their letters were read on the air, that it incited more conversations. So we should take their letters. We're doing the best we can. We're trying to get to as many as possible. We're reading them for content. We're reading them for repetition and trying to get a broad range of subjects. So please know that we don't hate you. We're not out to get you. We're not judging anyone. We're not doing it. We're just doing the best we can and getting through as many letters as we can. We're getting hundreds and hundreds of letters, and if we can get to 2 or 3% of them in any given morning, it's a good day. So please understand that. It don't take it personally. There's nothing. We're not. No one is on a list. Please know that. Also, to be helpful and to help get to as many letters as we possibly can, please keep them short. One of the problems that we run into and why we don't read letters is that they can be very, very long. They can also not make any sense because of spell check and other issues that aren't used, and there are words missing and we just don't understand them. So please do that. Keep them short. Keep them brief. You know, I know probably most of us know what PPE is, but if you can just on the fly just put in those words, you know, personal protective equipment, that we know what that is, so the listeners know that all that kind of stuff. And it's not just PPE; it's any abbreviation. Please just do that, and we're not out to get you. I promise. I know you think we are. We're not. Okay. So, and with that said, we go back to the letters. We're getting great letters, and that's why we want to keep them, obviously, to be a part of our program. We understand the service. The other thing I would say, yes, I said there were three things. The final thing is that we are a group. This current group is we all have expertise, and we have wonderful journalists, and some days we have scientists, and we have Jim is so amazing of knowing about government and the world and world governments, and of course, Alan is a political scientist, but if you ask us very specific questions about things having to do with about life or death questions about the virus or also about you know, what things are included in the bill and so forth, we'll do our best. But you know, a lot of those things, I think you're probably better Googling than asking us because we may or may not have the answers. And also, and some of those where I know we don't have the answer, I'm skipping those letters. So just another thing.
And Joe, for whatever it's worth, I just heard from David Scribner, the editor of The Edge, which comes out to a lot of people, thousands and thousands of people every morning online. And he said, I just want to thank you guys for doing what you're doing and keeping going. And he meant it. It was not gratuitous.
That's very nice.
Really nice.
Yeah. And, you know, that's certainly what we've heard. And so we will, we thank you very much for your understanding as we try to do this. As in every aspect of our life, nothing is as it used to be. So we just ask you for a little patience and understanding as we go through all of this. All right, we have just about 10 minutes, so let me get to as many letters as we can and to make as many people happy as we possibly can. Sonia says, stop counting Sanders out. As someone who is now unemployed as a result of the pandemic, I have been making calls to voters in upcoming states, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. And what I'm hearing from them, how they have always seen the need for Sanders policies, and suddenly they see the government money for those plans can be made available. If they really want it to be, Biden may not get to the 1991. Don't count him out, says Sonia. Paul says, 6 senators missed the first vote on the relief package. 5 senators were the Republicans that were in self-quarantine. The 6th was Bernie, who was in Burlington holding online news conferences. As Hillary said, Bernie only cares about Bernie. Carol says, maybe Trump's numbers are rising because the Russians are still involved in skewing things. We go to Paula, who says, per CNN Newsbreak this morning, any payout of checks to individuals won't happen until May. What happened to Mr. Mnuchin's statement of checks within 2 weeks, stated 2 weeks ago? That from Paula. Well, in fairness, it wasn't passed till last night, but still. Claude says, I have read in a number of places that one can get the virus again if one has had it and recovered. We touched on that earlier. Amanda says, hi, panel. I'm now in day 10 of self-isolation. I am one of a large number of people in Massachusetts who have symptoms consistent with ... but are low priority for testing, quite rightly, according to the telemedicine nurse at Berkshire Medical Center. For every one person who gets tested, we must assume that there must be 10 to 20 people who have COVID-19 but have not been tested. Anyone on that?
No, it's very interesting because, as you know, Andrew Cuomo said very earlier in the, early in the game that there was a sense that this thing may have been around for a lot longer than we thought. I know Rosemary had a deep cough. I had a deep cough. What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I said yes. I'm really. I learned a new word this week. It's called valetudinarian. And it's really a hypochondriac. And we have all turned into that because right now you keep hearing about this disease and reading it. And so any cough or sniffle, and it's like, oh, my God, I have it.
Yeah, it's
and,
true.
And I think that's a danger. You know, we can't even – if I could get a test, I would just because I want to know, did I have it?
Yeah, yeah. So when I walk out – well, no, you may have had it and don't have it anymore, and you would test negative, by the way. That's the way it is.
Well, as I understand it, the test can show whether you have had it.
Yes, the blood test, right?
They're two different tests.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, when I walk, I try not to go into any stores, but I really needed to eat a little food. So I did my 4 mile walk, and the last place was the Berkshire Co-op. And I went in, and when I walk, I have rhinitis, whatever that means, and I get a sniffly nose. So I walked in there, and I paid for the chicken, and the guy...
and then they shot you.
Well, he pushed back. He went as far back in that little cubicle as he could possibly go.
Lucy has a great letter, and I want to get to it because I certainly noticed it. I'm sure most of the panel did, obviously. But Lucy wants us to address the nativist tone of the president's speech last night, the press conference. Written by Stephen Miller, the assertion that we can be an independent country speaks volumes about the lack of understanding of contemporary reality. The president went at great lengths of talking about America, 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 and that we have to take care of us and we don't need the help of anybody else. And we need to do this independently and not with the help of anyone else. Jim, I'll go to you first.
Awful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just flies in the face of reality. That whether we're looking at climate change issues, pandemic issues, by definition, pandemic issues are global, that this is a time when we really need to be working globally, working with global institutions that have been set up in some cases, like the World Health Organization, to address these sorts of things. And a nativist approach, though it might be helpful to some politicians politically, just has no basis in reality and how to work on this. And to think that some of the countries in the world that haven't seen big numbers yet won't see them is also just a complete illusion. And when we see the virus really hitting hard in much of the rest of the world and not only having a terrible public health effect, but also having, you know, really letting loose, you know, all sorts of other issues that could lead to real serious chaos, this inevitably will have an effect on the United States and the rest of the world. So I think it's not only set on false assumptions, but I think it's also quite dangerous to take this approach.
And you just returned from Egypt, right?
Yes.
And so the question is, could you flesh out, if you could, your remarks based on what you were hearing there just before you left?
Well, Egypt had not really seen the effects of it as quickly as some other countries. I mean, we see that it's kind of moving around the world, and not every place, not even every state in the United States is feeling it simultaneously. So, but right now, I mean, I was on calls this morning with my colleagues at the American University in Cairo, and, you know, Egypt has instituted, they've suspended flights in and out of the country. They have instituted a curfew, a complete curfew for the evenings. They've done a lot of the closures that we're doing, and that's just one country of many, many, many that are trying to struggle and figure out what's the right thing to do. And when you're dealing with countries that you know are challenged economically already, and then you know we're in the beginning period of what's likely to be a massive global recession, the double whammy of the public health effect and the recession is really terrible. So, you know, some of these countries have close relationships with the United States, like Egypt. Others, if you look at the other end of the spectrum, like Iran, which has a highly adversarial relationship with the United States, there's an interesting debate that's going on in foreign policy circles as to whether or not the U.S. continuing sanctions against Iran is really worsening the crisis. Iran has been a real hotspot of this place, and the sanctions that have been levied against Iran have had an inevitable effect on the movement of medicine and all the other sorts of equipment that is required to fight this virus. This isn't just political. This is, you know, having an effect on Iranians and their ability to get through this crisis. So it really requires thinking globally about it. We cannot just say this is one country or another. It just simply won't work.
We just have about 3 or 4 minutes. I want to go to some letters, and please, panel, just jump in when you want to, if you want to respond to anything. Jennifer says, please remind our dear second home-owning friends up here that they are under quarantine for 14 days if they have left the city, and that means stay home. It's difficult to find Tylenol and other essentials because our little burgs are overwhelmed with people. I love my New York City friends, but again, stay home means not going out at all. Also, a reminder from an ER provider, even a one-on-one play date with another child can spread the virus, so please keep the kids home as well. Jennifer says it's important to note that Tony Fauci is a scientist first. He oversees the science we need now. Vaccine and treatment issues are his wheelhouse. The NIH website says this: he oversees an extensive research portfolio of basic and applied research. If he were to move jobs or lose the key job he has now, he would likely no longer have the resources available that he does now.
Couldn't agree more.
Rick.
Very important point.
Yes, a good point. Rick says, this one may get, here we go. Rick says, do the math. Cuomo wants companies to retool, produce ventilators, a complex device, and have the ventilators to him in 2 weeks. Cuomo didn't plan ahead and now making the administration responsible for bailing him out? Question mark. Aside from New York State no longer having an emergency supply of ventilators, didn't the state reduce the number of hospital beds required by hospitals? Anyone on that?
Beats me.
Okay. And let's see. We go to Stephen, who says, please remember that just because one is personally immune does not mean one is not capable of carrying the virus and capable of transmitting to others. Shelter in place, please. 2 weeks is not an eternity. We then go to Paul, said, we all know how much you hate and despise Trump. Can you please move on and have somebody tell us what is actually in the plan? Less about what you think that he is thinking. Tell us what is real. Well, I think we...
Oh, come on. Why are you listening to an opinion show then if you don't want to hear what we think?
Well, that's a good point, Rosemary, a very good point. Also, I think we've made the point, and Alan has said it several times, 1,000 pages, the details are still being worked out. I said, well, in the days and weeks to come, we'll know what's in the plan. As of right now, we don't. So,
well, we know a little bit. We know, for example, that corporations, a la Trump, are being taken care of. $500 billion, that's a lot of money. The most, by far, that any single purpose is going to. It's not going to individual taxpayers. It's not going to people who lost their jobs. It's going to the same old damned corporations that always got the money. Come on.
And, you know, would be fine if we have guarantees that the money will come back, as it did after the auto bailout. That would be just fine with me, but we don't know that yet.
All right. And I think what will be our final letter for this morning is, I'm trying to find one that's good here. Rosemary lists prominent Democrats with a plan for our current crisis and doesn't mention the Bernie Sanders plans, which is the most detailed. Why is that? I think we did talk about that. And we also said what Rosemary said, all the Dem governors and Senator Warren and Klobuchar have been outstanding so far. They should continue to be covered. My thanks to the entire panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Ketterer, and Chris Churchill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening. Doing a terrific job, Joe.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting British actor David Payne in An Evening with C.S. Lewis, recreating the twilight years of Lewis's life, April 5th at noon, troymusichall.org. And Gomez Neurology, Albany, a neurology clinic and infusion center providing care for neuromuscular disorders and headaches, multiple sclerosis, and chronic pain. Patients see a physician at every visit. GomezNeurology.com.